everyone. I'm Rachel. I'm an alcoholic. Sorry I'm not a little more dressed up. Bill texted me about half an hour before the meeting, and let me know, or else I definitely would have dressed up, because this is my home group, and I like to be formal for my home group, because it's real important to me. I heard my friend Blair speak, and I like the way he started off, and he said there are three things that are really important to him, and they're also really important to me in my sobriety. And the first one's my sobriety date, and that is October 7th, 2008, and the second one's my home group, and it's this home group right here, Tampa Bay Young People's Group, and the third one is my sponsor, and she's a fabulous lady, and I'll forever be indebted to her as well, to Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I owe Alcoholics Anonymous my life, and you'll see that, you know, you'll hear that when I tell you my story. It was a great day when I realized that there was nothing. I've never been so proud to be a part of something, and that's so true for me. I love being in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love alcoholics. I love all my friends. I love what we do here. I love the program, and I can't believe that I can say those things today and mean them. Because when I first came in, I might have said them because I thought that's what you wanted to hear, you know, but I really didn't feel it yet, you know, but today I feel it deep down, you know, and I'm so grateful for that. I'm going to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I'm born in Canada, Toronto. Well, really, it's called Buttonville. It's just outside of Toronto, and it was real small. But I have two big sisters. They're 8 and 11 years older than me, and I have two really, really great parents. I love my family. They're as sweet as anything, and I definitely can't blame my alcoholism on my childhood or anything my mom and dad did, or I can't blame it on anything. You know, it just is what it is. I'm an alcoholic. I have the disease of alcoholism, and today I'm okay with that. I was always really scared as a kid. I've grown up, you know, in fear. When I was little, I thought bad things were going to happen for no reason. Like, my parents would go on a trip, and I'd think they were going to get in a plane crash. They wouldn't come home. And I would worry myself sick to my stomach that I'd stay home from school, and my grandma would have to take care of me. And that's just kind of how it went, you know. I get scared about useless stuff, you know, and I worry myself into a frenzy. And fear has ran my life, you know, up until, well, I mean, still at times it can run my life, you know what I mean? But today I have a solution. I don't have to let fear take over. We were told by my dad when I was 7, and my sisters, one was in high school and one was about to start high school. And my dad came home one day and sat us down and said, you know, family, I got a job offer. We're going to move to Singapore. I don't really remember much except that that's all right, that I moved, you know, that's what happened. And I didn't really care because I was 7. My sisters were really upset. It wasn't so bad for me. You know, it was just different. I was in a city. It was really hot. It didn't snow. And there were a lot of Malaysians and Chinese people running all over the place, you know. And I thought it was neat, you know. I thought it was fantastic. And I got to do a lot of really wonderful things while I was living overseas. I went to an international school, so all the kids were kind of like me. They were from overseas, mostly North America, and we all went to the same school. And so it was really, we all kind of latched on to each other because we were all different in this country, you know. So I had friends right off the bat. I always liked to be silly, you know. I've always liked that attention from my friends. And from a very young age, the only way I knew I felt cool, I felt good about myself was because my friends were telling me so. It didn't matter that my family loved me so much and told me that I was the sweetest girl or that I was a bright girl or whatever. I had to hear it from my friends. And that was the only way I felt good on my own. You know, I didn't see it in myself, and I needed that validation. And that has carried through, you know, for a lot of my life. I lied for the first time in sixth grade. I wanted a boyfriend, and I wasn't allowed to have one. And I lied to my parents about it, you know. And I can remember that I lied, and I thought, this is an amazing thing to do, this lying thing. I really like it because I get my way. I get my way, so I'm going to lie. But I do remember immediately feeling guilty. I felt guilty. I felt guilty for lying to my parents. And I don't know how I can still distinctly remember that guilt from as far back as sixth grade, but I felt guilty. And and that's also part of the insanity of my disease. Every time I've lied, for the most part, I've always felt guilty, and I just continued to do it. And that's crazy. But, you know, that's just, it's my alcoholism. And I got really comfortable in lying, so I just continued to do it. My sisters moved away. They moved back to Canada when I was young. I was eight or nine, and both my sisters were gone. So I didn't get to live with them for the rest of my life. I only got to see them like once a year or so. And my parents and I just kind of continued living in Singapore. And had lots of friends. You know, I was involved in activities, and, you know, it was a good time. And then my parents, you know, I was walking around a mall with my mom, and she was just like, "Guess what? We're moving to Australia." You know, and I was like, "What?" You know, I thought, you know, "You're ruining my life," was my first reaction. How could you do this to me? You're taking me from my friends. You're evil. You know, you don't love me. I mean, these are all, I mean, I just felt so sorry for myself. And I was so angry, you know, and devastated, because I had such great friends, and my friends were my people. You know, I didn't really care about my family. I was like, "Whatever, you're my family. You're just there. You have to be there." You know, but I've got these great friends, and I don't want to leave them. You know, but obviously I had to. I didn't really have a choice in the matter. I couldn't stay. So, you know, I cried and cried, and off we went, you know. And I said, "You know, the only way I'm moving is if you get me a dog and a trampoline," you know. I didn't get the trampoline, you know, but when I got off the plane in Australia, we went straight to the puppy store. But I wouldn't have it any other way, you know what I mean? Because I was so devastated, and I was like, "Mommy and Daddy, you gotta feel sorry for me, because you're making me move. How could you do this to me? You know, or how could this happen to me? God, the victim." You know, I played the victim for a really long time. And, you know, I thought I'd never make friends again. And I think it was my first day of school, and I had 15 friends, you know, because I was different. So I was like, "That girl talks funny," you know. So they wanted to be my friend, you know, fair enough. And I was a little different. I showed up. I remember we went on this botanical gardens field trip, and I was at a Methodist all-girls school, which was new for me. And so we went on this field trip, and I was wearing like Birkenstock sandals with like socks, white socks, and like jean shorts that went to my knees, and like a big white t-shirt, you know. And these girls were in like little jeans and tank tops, and had purses. And I've got one of those backpacks that like sags down to there, because heaven forbid I wear a backpack properly. It's not cool when you're young. You know, I had to sag down real low. And they were just looking at me like I had three heads. They're like, "You're cool because you talk different, and we think you're kind of pretty, but the outfit's got to change, you know." And but I changed, because my friends are the ones that make I feel good about myself when other people are telling me good things about myself, because I can't feel that way on my own. And even though my family's like, "Be yourself," you know what I mean, whatever, mom, dad, I don't want to be myself, I want to be like everyone else, and, you know, just be like my peers. And so it changed, you know. And their parents, those girls' parents, let them do a lot more than mine did. You know, there was public transportation in the city, and they all take trains, and I lived out in the suburbs, you know, so my mom and dad were always picking me up, and I finally convinced them to let me take public transportation home because it was more fun. And, you know, I just always was trying to change things to be more like them, you know, but I didn't know it at the time. I wasn't like, "Yes, I'm actively changing," you know. It was just like, "Oh, okay." It was just like a normal response for me to just want to be like them, you know, to fit in. You know, no one in my family is an alcoholic. Maybe my sister claims that my great-great-grandfather was one. I don't really know. You know, my parents don't know anything about it. My sister just says so. So I don't know. You know, no one in my family, they don't drink in excess. They don't understand why I drank. My sisters maybe got drunk once or twice, never tried drugs, never smoked cigarettes. I mean, it just, you know, drinking was just an occasional thing, like a luxury, you know, for every once in a while. And those every once in a while, when my dad was drinking scotch as I was growing up, I was asking him for sips because I liked the way scotch burned in my mouth. And I remember in Australia, there was like this pretty bottle of Polish vodka in the freezer. And I would wake up in the middle of the night, and I would go down to the freezer, and I would take swigs because I liked the way I was curious. I like the way it burned, and I was probably like 10, you know, and then I go back upstairs and I go to bed, you know, and I don't know why I remember that either, but I do, you know, like it just all kind of makes sense now, you know, but at the time I was just curious, and, you know, and a lot of my girlfriends had been drunk, and you know, and my parents kind of knew about certain instances because bad things, like one of my friends got drunk and sliced the tip of her finger off, like through a nerve when she was 11, but all of our parents found out about it, you know, and my mom was like, you're not hanging out with those girls, and somehow I would manipulate the story to let my parents hang out with them again, but I wasn't drinking at that point, you know, and one night my girlfriend came over and it was just like, that was the night I decided to drink or get drunk, was what it really was, you know, my first drunk. I think I was probably 11 or 12 or something, and you know, we just stole vodka, mixed it with purple Gatorade, didn't know how much of it to measure out, probably measured out too much, and it was gross, but it was fun. I laughed, you know, I cried, I puked, I, you know, I shook with like spins, you know, I put myself in the shower under cold water, I mean, you know, and then my friend tucked me into the movie 28 Days, you know, I don't know why, it just happened to be on TV, you know, and that was the movie I was tucked into on my first drunk, you know. Ironic. And, you know, I don't remember thinking, now I fit in, or now I feel better about myself. You know, it was just now I could tell my friends that I've been drunk, and I'm just like everyone else, you know? And now I'm cooler, was really what I thought, you know? And I felt guilty, you know? But it didn't matter, because that cool totally outweighed the guilt, you know, at the time. And, you know, I just continue to lie a lot, lying, to, you know, and I get caught and grounded and try to do things I wasn't allowed to do, and, you know, and I was a moody, you know, 12-year-old on top of it all, you know, I was 12, I was a preteen, I was a jerk, you know, I wanted nothing to do with my family, and now, you know, coupled with, like, lies, and I'm starting to drink, you know, it was a mess, and I still had, I had the sweetest family, you know, but I always tried to manipulate them, and I always tried to make myself look good to my family, so I could still have their approval, you know, because I needed everyone's approval always to be okay with myself. You know, my parents told me another day, it was actually, we went away on a vacation for their anniversary dinner, and both my sisters were in the country, and we're sitting at this beautiful restaurant on the beach, and they're like, we're moving to Fort Lauderdale, you know, and I looked at them, and I stood up, and I went into the bathroom, and I cried, and I stayed in there for about 3 hours, and I didn't speak to them for the rest of the trip, because once again, I thought they were ruining my life, you know, they're taking me away from my friends, from my home. I was so mad, you know, and not once this whole time did I ever say, well, thank you for all the great vacations you guys have taken me on. You know, thank you for giving me such a wonderful experience to live all over the world, Mom, Dad, because not a lot of people get to do that. You know, I couldn't, I was just too selfish and self-centered to even think to say something like that. I just didn't honestly feel that way. And in hindsight, it, you know, that's crazy. You know what I mean? I see it so differently now, you know. I'm so grateful for that opportunity to have lived overseas, you know. But at the time, I just, it's self-pity, you know, playing the victim, you know, and resentment, you know. It was just, I was full of it. And, you know, we moved, and, you know, my friends helped prepare me to be, like, an American, and so I knew, you know, I was going to be a cheerleader, and I was going to date a football player, or someone that was Usher-like, you know, that could dance like Usher and sing like Usher, you know, and I learned all these, like, ludicrous rap songs, and, you know, and, what other song? I don't know. There were a lot of them, you know, but I was prepared, either way, to be an American, and so I got here thinking I was going to fit right in as an American, you know, and I did. I was a cheerleader. I could go up to the football players and rap ludicrous, you know, and you know, they thought I was neato, you know, they were like, oh, this girl's weird, you know, and they thought I was Australian on top of it. You know, I'm clearly not Australian. Don't even have an accent. Maybe I tried to keep one up for a little bit. I don't know, but it was out the window. I didn't sound like an Australian, but because I had moved from Australia, everyone thought I was Australian, so I was that much cooler, you know, and then when I really told them I was Canadian, it was just like, there were room for jokes all over the place, you know, Australian, Canadian, you know, just crazy girl. I was wearing pigtails. No one liked pigtails, apparently, freshman year of high school. And, you know, but it was like the joking that gave me attention, you know, that they still, they would poke at me, but they still kind of liked, they liked me, you know what I mean? And we were friends, and I was getting that attention. So I was, you know, I got that validation. I got that approval from my peers. So once again, I was okay with myself, you know, and still didn't really want anything to do with my parents, you know. I was that kid that, you know, I'd sit down at the dinner table, you know, and I would eat dinner in 10 minutes, you know, and I'd go up to my bedroom. You know, my parents would be sitting down there thinking, well, I really wish that Rachel would just sit for 25 more minutes and eat dinner with me. You know, and those are moments that I miss. You know, I wish I could redo that, you know, but the greatest thing is that today I get to sit for an hour at the dinner table with them and I get to enjoy every minute of it and I don't have to bolt because I don't have something better to do than hang out with my parents. Hanging out with my parents is the best thing to do, you know, when I'm there. And, you know, I was just that so self-absorbed. And I mean, I know a lot of teenagers do that, you know what I mean? But, you know, I knew in my heart that's not the kind of person, that's not the kind of kid I wanted to be, you know what I mean? But I didn't know how to be any other way because I was so focused on what everyone else was doing, all my friends that helped, you know, which made me feel good about myself, you know. And when I got to high school, you know, I got involved in everything, you know, and I've always grown up with that, you know, overachieving and, you know, reaching for the brownie points, you know, that's what makes you successful, you know, and I thought that was the only way that I could be successful was just to dive in to activities, you know, and look good on the outside, you know, be Miss American Heritage High School, you know, that's what I wanted to be, you know, because I thought that's what I had to do to be okay, you know, or to be liked, or, you know, that's just the image of myself I thought I needed to be. And, you know, so I did that. And I had friends, and I was going fine. And, you know, then some older kids started paying attention to me. And, you know, it was like my other friends didn't exist because now the older kids are paying attention to me and they drank. So now I'm going to start drinking a little bit, even though I judged everyone for drinking and doing things other than drinking hardcore. You know, I mean, I judged, would gossip, you know, look down on you, you know, and it's so quick to change, you know, because there was some other kind of Rachel I wanted to be because some other people were paying attention to me, you know, and that just started, you know, a little progression in high school. You know, things I never thought I'd do, you know, like the moment I tried it. You know, drugs are part of my story. I'll just talk a little bit about them, and not much. Like, first time I smoked weed, you know, there's no moderation. It was just like every single day up until I got sober. You know, there's just no moderation for me. And I didn't understand it at the time because I was cool. And now all these things that I was doing, this partying, it became my identity. And those people liked me, and they liked having me around. And therefore, I liked myself, you know. And life was good, except the guilt, you know, started to get a little bit bigger because I kept lying to my parents to do the things I wanted to do. I kept driving their cars, you know, in a wasted state, you know, and I didn't live close to my friends, you know. So many times I started to drink more heavily later in high school. I would drive home in blackouts, you know, 25 minutes on the highway, you know, and I'd wake up the next day and just be like, whatever, it was blackout, all right, you know, and I'd go back to it. I didn't think blackouts were a big deal. I was like, everyone's got blackouts, just don't remember. I just drank too much. Who cares, you know? I'm in high school. People drink too much in high school, you know? I'll get a better tolerance as I get older, you know? So I thought, you know, not the case. And you know, I took advantage of so many opportunities. I mean, I would organize blood drives in blackouts at school. You know, like, that's not safe, you know? And I can sit here and giggle about it now, you know, but it's not funny, you know what I mean? In reality, that kind of stuff is not funny, you know? I couldn't see it. I was so blindsided by all this fun that I thought I was having and all this cool stuff, you know, like the drug dealing and the fake IDs and the almost getting caught by the cops, but not really, you know, like that stuff was exciting and cool, you know, and I'm so grateful today that I don't feel the same way. That stuff's not cool, you know what I mean? That stuff's not exciting, that stuff's not fun. Those people aren't the kind of people that I want to hang around with anymore, but those are the kinds of people I thought I had to hang around with then. And you know, by the time I graduated high school, you know, I was drinking every day after lunch, and I was doing a lot of drugs every day, you know, and there were times when me and my friends would be like, all right, we're not going to do that after school today, okay, deal, pinky swear, you know, and every day after school, we ended up doing the same thing we did the day before, you know, I would swear it off, you know, and I didn't know what it meant. Like, I didn't know that it wasn't normal to swear off drugs and alcohol. You know, I didn't know. I didn't even think. You know, I just had no idea. And so, you know, I would just shove it in the other direction and forget all about it and keep doing what I was doing, keep trucking forward, you know. And, you know, my parents knew I was lying to them. You know, I find out to this day, they're like, why did you keep lying to us when you knew that we knew? I was like, no, I honestly didn't know that you knew the truth. I really thought I was getting away with all this stuff, like insanity. I thought I was getting away with it, and I wasn't, you know, and I hurt them, you know. And so when I graduated high school, I ended up getting into a decent college, you know, and I had a scholarship, and, you know, I always had to keep up that image, you know, in school, and I did that through my grades, you know, and I thought that was covering up the rest of my life, when at that point it wasn't, you know, everybody knew what I was doing. And I went up to college, you know, when I got there, I couldn't find the things that I wanted to find, and, you know, I couldn't just get alcohol anywhere, and I was kind of scared to use my fake ID, and, you know, I ended up meeting, like, probably the worst frat guys you could ever meet, you know, at the college, and I hung out with them because they liked to party the way I liked to party, you know, and when I wasn't partying, I was thinking about it all the time, and they seemed to want to party all the time, too, so I figured they must think the way I think, you know, because I'm obsessing about alcohol all day long when I can't get it, you know. And so they would pick me up, drive me around, get me alcohol, you know, we would have fun, you know, and I'd binge drink, you know, and I was like, I'm a freshman in college, and this is what we do, you know, we don't show up to our first day of school because we're eating mushrooms, and we don't go to class, even though it's 20 feet away, you know, we don't do that kind of stuff, you know, I thought that's what everybody was doing, and it wasn't the case, and, you know, things just kind of started to spiral out of control, you know, I met a guy, and, you know, he partied in different ways than I'd ever seen anyone party, and did things I thought that I would never in a million years ever do, you know, and I ended up doing them, you know, and I got kicked out of college after that year, you know, and that my first year was really terrifying, and, you know, there were moments where I didn't know if I could keep living the way I was living, you know, I didn't think I was going to make it for very long. I knew something had to change. I knew people didn't graduate college, get married, have kids, do family things, with, you know, the way I was doing things, and, but, you know, I didn't stop, and, you know, I continued. I kind of would tame things down at times or try to stop for a little bit, but I never stopped. I was always on something. Every day, you know, and I never thought I was an alcoholic, even though I was drinking every single day, whether it be one glass of wine or whether it be five bottles of wine or whether it be an entire bottle of Southern Comfort, you know, I was drinking every day, and it never dawned on me that I was an alcoholic, you know, I just thought I was a drug addict, you know, which is insanity, you know, I'm an alcoholic, I drink every day, and when I start, I can't stop, and, you know, I tried to get back into that college, you know, and it was a long next 2 years, and, you know, my family was worried about me. My mom didn't even want to answer the phone when I called, you know, and what had happened over that 2 years was, you know, my dad ended up getting prostate cancer, and, you know, I don't know when he was diagnosed. I don't know what kind of treatment he got. I don't know when he got treatment. I don't know how long it lasted, and I don't know what the day was that they said he was all better, because I didn't care to find out, you know. I knew I called them every day, but when I called them every day, I was just doing it so that they would think I was okay, so I could keep doing what I was doing. And I'd turn around and I'd go to my friends and I'd say, hey guys, my dad's sick, feel sorry for me, buy me drinks, you know, because that's the kind of alcoholic that I was. And same thing happened with my sister. You know, my big sister, she got thyroid cancer, and it was the same thing. I went to my friends, I'd say, my sister's sick, you should feel sorry for me, let's go get wasted, you know, and I'm not proud of that, but that's, you know, that's what my disease did to me, you know, and I'm so grateful today that I can say that I talk to my dad every day because I want to talk to my dad, not because I want him to think I'm doing okay. You know, I genuinely care what's going on in my family's life, and my sister, I can show up to thyroid cancer support groups, even when she's not there, just to learn more about it, to go back to her, to tell her what I learned, so she can start her own support group, you know, and I love doing that stuff today, and I'm just so glad that I don't have to treat them the way that I used to treat them. I went to Canada summer 2008 for my sister's second surgery. You know, when I was there, you know, she had just said to me, you know, one in three women get cancer. I'm the one out of three sisters to get it. You're going to be just fine. Take care of yourself, you know. And I was so broken at that point. I was so broken, and I could not stay sober. I didn't even try, you know. And the guilt just, it was so It was so profound, you know. My guilt consumed me, and I decided to move to Tampa because I got into school here. And why I picked Tampa, I don't really know. It was just conveniently between two boyfriends that I had at the time, you know. And but I really didn't know anyone here, you know. But honestly, that was God doing for me what I could not do for myself, helping me pick Tampa, because it is a blessing that I live here. And the pain just got great enough, and I had this boyfriend at the time that had tried to be sober before, and he said to me, you should try meetings, when he saw I couldn't stop crying, you know, because my solution didn't work anymore. I didn't get any relief whatsoever from drugs and alcohol, none, not even a smidgen, unless I was knocked out, you know. And I said, I don't know what meetings are, I don't know what that means. You know, I thought I was going to have to call my mom and dad and ask them to send me to treatment, but I was so self-centered, I didn't want to go get sent to treatment, because then I would lose the apartment I was going to lose anyway, the cat I wasn't taking care of, I was going to be taken away from the school I was about to get kicked out of, you know, and that's why I didn't want to ask for help from my parents, because I wanted to keep all these things I was about to lose anyway, you know. And so I looked up a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and it took me a couple weeks to do so, you know. But you know, that morning I woke up and I didn't take a drink, you know, and I showed up at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was so scared, and I picked up a white chip, and that was on October 7th of last year. And I heard this really great speaker, and I left, and I cried for hours on the phone to the one friend that I had told what was going on, because I worked so hard to keep up this double life. And I told her, this is going to take forever. I don't think this is ever going to get better. You know, it's going to be a long time before I get a glimpse of hope, a glimpse of happiness, you know. And lo and behold, it didn't take too long, you know, once I started working this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came in and I started to get honest, and as soon as I was able to be honest, I felt a little freer, you know. And I got a sponsor, you know, and she asked me if I was willing to go on any length to stay sober, and I told her yes, you know. And have I been willing throughout my sobriety to do absolutely everything? No way, you know. But I've tried, you know. I've tried real hard, and if I've stayed unwilling about something, eventually I became willing, because you know God made it pretty clear to me that I had to become willing, or I was going to take a drink, you know. And I know through and through today that I don't want to drink, you know. I don't want to be that Rachel anymore, you know what I mean? And I don't have to be that Rachel anymore because of this program. I started working the steps, you know, that are laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I relate to every page in that book, and that's so what a beautiful thing, you know, that there's a book all about me and all about all of us, you know what I mean? Like, it's all about all of us, you know, and it's been around for a long time, you know, and it lays out a solution for me and how to live my life and how to form good relationships and how to find a God in my understanding, because I've never had God my entire life. I never even spoke the word God, you know. It just wasn't anything that my family and I talked about. We never went to church. We don't have a religion, and I didn't think that God was an option for me. And I found a sponsor who had everything that I wanted, you know, and she was so gracious enough to take me through the steps, you know. And I'm sure she had to bite her fist a couple times during the way, because I'm quite sure that I was very unbearable at times, you know. And but God bless her, you know. I love her so much, and I think my sponsor is very God-centered, and she helped me to aspire to be the same way, you know. I don't know anything about God, you know what I mean? I just know what you guys tell me, and when I didn't know how to have faith, everybody just told me, just believe that other people believe, you know. And I stuck with that for a while until I think it was one day, you know, I was visiting my parents, and my parents had seen a change in me, and this woman that's friends with my parents, that didn't know I was in AA, didn't really see me drinking, you know, but she's known me since I was little, she came up to my room one night. She was just visiting. I hadn't seen her in a while, you know. And she said, I don't know what's going on with you, but I've known you your whole life, Rachel, and I've never seen you more at peace, you know. And I got, you know, started crying. You know, I got in my bed and I started crying. And that moment was the moment that I realized that there was no one else in this world I wanted to be other than myself. And, I came to believe in a power greater than myself. You know what I mean? That I have been restored to sanity, you know. And my perspective on life is just, It's so different today. You know what I mean? The things that I think are cool, the things that I want to do, the places I want to go, the people I want to be around, you know what I mean? They're completely the opposite of all the things that I, you know, all those things a year ago. And it's just crazy to me, you know? I get to go home and visit my parents and sit between my mom and my dad and hold both of their hands and watch a movie. Crazy. I would have never wanted to do that. I love those moments, you know? I have friends. Like real friends, the friends I've made in the last year, those friendships are so much more rewarding than the friendships I worked on 10 years having. You know, I have some phenomenal and very inspirational women in my life, you know, and I'm so comfortable around them, and I love and I'm so honored that they trust me and they want me as their friend, you know, because I was the worst friend, and I always tried to convince myself that I was a good friend, you know, and I never was. And, you know, I love this home group. This home group has, you know, thrown me into service, you know, and I didn't know what service was, and I didn't know why I had to do it, you know, but early on, you know, I started driving girls around. Sometimes I liked it, sometimes I didn't, you know, but I had a car, and some people don't, you know, so I might as well use it for good, you know, and now when I was 4 months sober, I started bringing meetings into jail, and that was scary, you know, I didn't know why, but I knew I wanted to go because that's where I should be, you know. If I had, like, 2 weeks after I had gotten sober, the guy that I was hanging out with all the time got arrested, and I was with him every single day, you know what I mean, every single night, you know, and if maybe, if I hadn't chosen to get sober, I would have been with him 2 weeks later in jail, I don't know, you know, but I love going to jail, and I love bringing meetings into there, you know, to see where I could be, and also to help women, you know, that have lost hope, you know, and just maybe one of them will hear a message, you know, just maybe one of them will want to get out and try a new way of life. I don't know, you know what I mean? But it's my responsibility to go in there and carry the message, and I know that today. And, you know, just showing up for commitments, showing up for life, you know. I'm a student today, and I'm a student that shows up, you know, and I'm a student that tries hard and turns things in on time, and, you know, I don't always not procrastinate, but I work real hard at, you know, at trying to get ahead on things. You know, I have a planner, something as simple as that, you know, so that I can make plans and stick with them rather than tell everybody what I think they want to hear and then make quadruple plans, you know, and then I end up screwing all my friends over in the end, you know, because that's the kind of stuff I used to do, you know. I'm just selfish and self-centered, and I do things without regard for other individuals, you know, and today I just have this, you know, this spiritual toolkit, you know, and I can ask God to, you know, to dress me in spiritual armor in the morning, you know, and help me go out into the world, you know, and carry his message and do his will to the best of my ability, you know. I try to go out into the world and think about what it is that I can bring to the table rather than what it is I can take from the table. You know, when I go to school, I try to think of it as I'm going to school and maybe going to school one day I can use this to help others, you know. And I try to keep that mindset because I'm not perfect, and very quickly I will forget and I will take credit for all the successes that I'm getting in my life, you know. And that's not acceptable for me, because when I start to take credit for some reason, I start to think that I'm not an alcoholic, you know. And then I could go out and drink, and I don't want to drink, because to me, to drink is to die, you know. And, you know, if you're new, you know, just, you know, this is such a beautiful thing, you know, and it's something I can't put in words. And when I first came in, I couldn't comprehend this life that everybody was talking about. But I knew I just had to try it, because I had nothing to lose, but I had everything to gain, you know. And I try to take action on a daily basis, and I try to do the best that I can. And sometimes I fall short, but when I fall short, you know, I'm surrounded by so many amazing people that help lift me back up, you know. And I'm forever grateful for that. And I don't know how much time I have left, but I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you for letting me share. Thank you.